I would say we retreated. Let's say that our experience was dreadful, starvation. The accommodation was appalling, overcrowded, and we had nothing with which to occupy your time. We didn't even have cards or anything like that. There was nothing. You didn't even have toilet paper, you know.
And it's just 2%.
No, I forgot what I was going to say. But it wasn't by design. It wasn't by design. It was a matter of logistics, and they were short of everything themselves. By this time, they were pretty well on starvation rations, the German people. Now, we didn't have a very high priority, so that was it. It wasn't that they were being mean to us or anything. It was just,
Do you remember any sort of anecdotal stories, anything humorous that happened to you or the men you were there with?
I can't remember very much that was humorous. We tried to maintain a sense of humor, of course, but it was pretty difficult under those conditions. You were cold and hungry all the time. It really doesn't promote a great deal of humor. Looking back on it, I can't recall. One very pleasurable thing has happened during my escape, and it was early evening. Herb and I, we had slept in a field, and we came across a garden shed. And before we left, we had agreed that we would stay away from all populated areas and trying to scrounge food, because that's how people got caught. But we saw this garden shed, and it was, maybe 100 yards from the people's house. So we took a chance, and we went to this garden shed. We thought we're not going to find any food there, but just in case. And there, lo and behold, there on the table, on the left of the door as we walked in, was an unlabeled tin of food or something. We didn't know what it was. An unlabeled tin. It had no label on it. It had been taken off, I guess. Probably an old thing. So with a pair of garden shears or something, we managed to get the top off this thing, and it was asparagus, a tin of asparagus. Of course, that's the first food we'd had for days and whatnot. And of course, we were pretty weak from hunger before we started out. So we ate that, and we carried on. I've often wondered what they thought about that open tin sitting in there on the table that we left there, what they thought about it. But anyway, we were walking along, and I don't know what made me look behind, but I turned around to my right, and we were in the woods, and there was an open field, green field, in the woods on the other side. And coming from behind was probably about a dozen, at least, small deer, brown deer, galloping along, and they leap about 20 feet, you know, along. They were beautiful little things. And they cleared a fence, must have been about a 5-foot fence, as though it wasn't there. It just flew over. And it was the most marvelous thing I'd ever seen. And they were quiet. You couldn't hardly hear them. You know, and that's about the only pleasurable thing I can remember about that whole escapade since I left England. But we had some pretty hair-raising experiences, too, during our escape. You'd want to be walking at night, and of course you wouldn't see anything until you got right up to it. And one day we were walking along, and off to our right, along this highway, or the narrow highway, moon was shining bright. We could see our shadows on the ground, you know. And off to our right, there was an orchard. And in the orchard was looked like a whole squadron of Tiger tanks. And we didn't see any sentries around, but there were sentries, or it must have been. And nobody said anything to us. We just kept on walking, and their gate. I was terrified. I thought we were going to get picked up right there. About two fellows walking along it by a tank park like that. We weren't challenged. We just kept walking. And I should have known that where there are tanks, there's going to be infantry. It never even dawned on me. I wasn't thinking clearly, I guess. And we kept walking and walking along. About 2 miles further down, or maybe a mile, we were walking along, and all of a sudden, on both sides of us, about maybe 100 cigarettes all along the ditch, both sides of us. And it was quiet, some people talking. And we were right in the middle of a company of infantry, German infantry. They were both sides, they were resting in the room. Oh, I thought I'd die. There we were, what do we do? And some of them spoke out to us, and nobody challenged us. First we thought, well, nobody's going to challenge us, they're just going to mow us down right on the street there, on the road. But they didn't. And we just kept walking, and they would holler out to it. And then everything just quiet down, and nobody was saying, they focused their attention on us. And I thought, oh God, you know, our luck has run out. And they didn't even challenge us. I don't know why. I figure they probably thought we were a couple of SS or something like that. And if we were heading towards the British lines, we were SS. They would have encouraged us to go. You know, they didn't like the SS either. Maybe that's why they didn't say anything. But oh, my heart was in my mouth. I thought I'd die right there in the road. But you know, we never even lost a step. We just kept on marching down the road, the two of us plodding along. Next morning, we were following a river, the Aller River. And the next morning, before it was daylight had broken, but the sun wasn't up. And we came to this tree, a big tree, and we sat down to rest. And we realized that we couldn't go any further, not without food or whatnot, and we were so tired. But we thought, well, we'll lie down there and have a sleep. But we realized that we couldn't go any further. We had to give ourselves up. We were too weak. I thought, well, we could go back to the last town we came to and give ourselves up. And we watched the river, we watched the sun hadn't come over the trees yet, and we watched the river and the change colors, and the sun came up higher over the horizon. And there was off to our left where he'd be walking, probably about 500 yards, there was a bush, a forest, but there was about a yay big break in the forest that we could see the road. And we could see panzers going up the road, Kubelwagens and whatnot, but they were too far away to hear. But we could see these little ants and whatnot going back and forth. And I was just about going to sleep. And it dawned on me, why are those tanks, panzers, going north when the enemy's to the south? So I said this to her, we should maybe go and inspect this road a little further. He was not very happy about that. He was going to sleep, and he'd seen enough. He says, I've seen enough panzers, thank you. If you want to go, you go ahead, but he's going to sleep. So anyway, I got up, and I went up to this, and it was kind of an incline, and I got up to the forest, and I got down on my knees, and I sneaked through the forest, and I pushed a branch aside, and I looked. And there was a Sherman tank in the ditch with its gun pointing up in the air ineffectively. It was the guy got stuck in this damn ditch, you see, and he was waiting for a recovery to come and get it out. And there was a British guardsman there. And that was it for us. I hollered to... I went across. I shouldn't have. But I leaped across that road. Oh, I had wings. And I just about hugged that tank. And this guardsman, he hollered at me. I'm like, who the bloody hell are you? You know, and I can imagine, I looked terrible. You know, our heads were shaven, our clothes were rags and whatnot, and looked like a skeleton. And he must have frightened him, you know. It's a good thing he didn't shoot me, you know. And so I told him we were Canadian. He couldn't believe that, you know, prisoners of war. I remember he said, you poor bastard, he says. And he had a crate of eggs on the tank. A crate they liberated that day. And bread, white bread. And he got out a cooker and he fried us up, each two eggs. Some white bread. God, you know, we hadn't seen food for so long. And we ate that like we'd never eaten before. But we couldn't swallow it, you know, we were so emotional. We couldn't, it was hard to swallow. And then after we ate it, it nearly killed us. I thought I'd die. And they took us back by jeep to their headquarters. They were the Grenadier Guards, British Grenadiers. And they took us back to their headquarters for, I thought, a debriefing. But no, they locked us up, the two of us, with a German officer in a barn until we were interrogated. They didn't know who we were, you know, really. And, there was this German officer. He was really the cat's whiskers, I'll tell you. Boy, he was talking about... spit and polish, and he was a young guy, and he was sitting on a trunk, his trunk, with his leg crossed, smoking a cigarette in a holder, and he had planned on giving himself up. He'd probably never been in action. He'd probably just commissioned or something out of university, and he wasn't going to die for the fatherland, and he was sitting on his trunk, possessively. And of course, we were the most disreputable looking characters, probably stunk to high heaven. And he looked upon us as though we were a couple of maggots, you know. And because we realized we weren't very pretty. And so until we were interrogated, the two of us, we really gave him a hard time. He spoke English, and we were being very solicitous of him, you know, and we'd push our faces right in, you know, and tell him, don't worry, you know, and whatnot. But I said, these British, I said, you got to watch them. I said, they were real treat officers during interrogation, very politely, whatnot. But the problem is, he says, when they're leading you out, they'll shoot you in the back of the head, you know. But at any rate, we were interrogated, and... there was a British captain, I guess he was probably the intelligence officer, and a lieutenant, and the lieutenant was a Canadian. They were what they call Canlone officers. Just about every British regiment had one or two Canlone officers. And and in the book I saw there were 600 and something Canadians serving with the British Army, young subalterns. In the British Army. Of course, as soon as he spoke, I realized he was Canadian. And of course, as soon as we spoke, he realized we were Canadian. But they had to go through the drill of interrogating us anyway, because there were a lot of SS walking around in civilian clothes and things like that. But after that, we went back to England, back to Brussels, and flew back to England, rejoined our Canadian Army again, and then shipped us home. He sent us on leave twice. They're waiting for a ship.
And how long was it from when you escaped? How long was it then until the end of the war?
Oh, the war ended when we were in England waiting to go back, May the 8th. We escaped on April 8th. We were picked up on the 10th, actually. And, you know, on May the 8th, we were, the war ended. And I got back in May, and the war ended in August. I was discharged before the war ended, and I turned 19 in September. I was 18 when I was discharged.
How did you find Canada when you came back after your experiences?
You know what was the real strange thing was to hear a Canadian woman talk. We hadn't heard a Canadian woman talk. And you know, they really sounded coarse to us. We were accustomed to, our ears weren't accustomed to that. We were accustomed to listening to British girls and whatnot. And we were shocked when the first time a Canadian woman spoke. Yeah, it was funny.
Tell me, when you were in the camp and during the, as a prisoner of war, what did you miss the most? I mean, obviously there's family and things, but were there anything else? Like, did you miss a specific food, tea, coffees?
Oh, food was the only thing you thought about.
Food in general, any kind of food.
Let me read you a short subject, something to do with sex, Mr. Wagg. Very interesting. Wild sex. Where are they here? Right in here. On the subject of sex, in case you're interested, though it's likely the subtitle has already elicited your undivided attention, it's not that it was a taboo subject, it was simply a subject rarely, if ever, discussed or even thought about. Sexual stimulation or its participation requires that body and mind maintain a basic level of nutrition. Therefore, for the whole of our incarceration, sex was simply a subject which held little interest as a topic of conversation, and certainly a pursuit in which no one had the least inclination to participate. In fact, it wasn't even dreamed of. Come to think of it, under the circumstances, its removal from our conscience for the duration was a blessing. Thus, here ended the riveting, unabridged story of sex life in the Stalag, film rights pending.
So you didn't crave sex, just food.
Food.
Nutrition.
That's all, food, yeah. And everything I got, I wanted to turn into porridge.
Why?
Because that's what I wanted, that's what I needed. It was filling. For instance, we got different kinds of parcels. Canadian parcels were the most popular. Scottish parcels, the St. John's ambulance thing on Creston, the Scottish parcels, were the next that I liked because they had porridge in them. And they had these thick biscuits, oatmeal biscuits, which I would turn into porridge.
Which was probably the best thing for
your
stomach, too.
Oh, yes, imagine. Yes, yeah. But you try to inflate anything with water or something like that to make it to go further. Yeah.
So you had no problem returning to Canadian life? It was an easy transition for you?
I thought it was. What I found most difficult is that I had no one to talk to. I was still 18, and my friends were still in high school, last year of high school, when I got back. And I had no trouble fitting in with them, except their juvenile attitude towards things. I'd long got over that. And I suppose that was it. I had nobody to talk to. They were kids, you know. And my experience as in the salt mines never left me. I'm on pills even now, because if I don't take them, I get such horrid nightmares. All of them claustrophobic or initiated. So I still have to take pills, depression pills, to counteract that.
So it never completely leaves you, does it?
No. No. And I, in the prison hospital in Fallenbostel, I came down with a skin ailment on both ankles, and started one and went in the other, and it was just diagnosed as a skin problem, which turned out to be psoriasis, which never left me either. They pay me a pension for it. But it's a damn nuisance. Anyway, I survived.
Looking back, just in closing the interview now, looking back, how do you feel about the justification for the war and, you know, Canadian involvement in it?
Well, the only thing I really am still angry about with the NRMA, the National Resources Mobilization Act. Do you know about that? Okay. Now, they had conscription in Canada, but not for overseas. This is to placate Quebec. And they had 67,000 soldiers sitting here in Canada that wouldn't go overseas. Came under that umbrella. They didn't have to go overseas. So they sat here in their bumpers while our holding units were dry. We were going in sometimes half strength. And today, those fellows, they have been accorded the title of veterans. You see the veterans' plates and whatnot? I won't have one on my car because of that. People who just put on a uniform and trained are all called veterans today. Veteran doesn't necessarily mean that you were in the fighting anymore. It just means that you were in the forces. I'm really angry about that. But that's the way it is. Everything has to be a level playing field.
Political correctness.
Political correct, yes. Yes. And these are the difficult things too, because your values are altogether different, your sense of values. Our judicial system really rankles me, because we were brought up, you paid for your crimes in our day. Today they don't. They get a slap on the wrist, and we veterans find this very difficult.
You fought for a sense of justice that you no longer see in the world.
No, that's right. And they treat their country as though they take it for granted. They don't even, people go, I'm not going to vote, this sort of thing. I don't know, but it's a terrible thing. But people, without something to fight for, without some cause, civilization seems to deteriorate every once in a while. It seems to take a war to strengthen their backbone. However, hope we never have another one like that.
Me too. And I just want to thank you very much for a very lucid and intelligent interview. Thank you.
Thank you.